For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
On Saturday, September 22nd, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Game Lab and Boston Indies will be presenting the first annual Boston Festival of Indie Games, which will be held at MIT's EGNG Education Center from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Here to tell us more about Boston FIG is one of the PR folks who have helped to spread the word about this upcoming event, as well as one of the producers over at Part 12 Studios. Please welcome Mr. Caleb Gardner.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing great.
So, where did the idea for the Boston Festival of Indie Games first come into fruition?
Well, I think going back, it started around January or February of this year. We were talking about it. I think someone posed the question, just sort of like, you know, what do people think about the idea of doing a festival? And I think the idea really just instantly was great. People were just like, this is awesome. We totally need to do this. I don't know why we haven't done this sooner. And so it was really an idea whose time had come. And so we started meeting after the monthly Boston Indie Groups. And we just meet downstairs at a place called Lucky's and just sit around and talk about it, brainstorm ideas. And this is, you started picking up basically around the time in March, I think, is when PAX East was coming up. We realized this was a really important opportunity for us to get the word out to gamers, because we really thought one of the key things that would make this different from other festivals is to make it more gamer-centric, in that we wanted the audience to be the participants in the voting process on the various categories for the games that would be at the showcase. And so we realized that we had a kind of a problem there, because we're really great at getting each other together at events and pretty well connected amongst each other. We really didn't have a public-facing outlet to reach the gaming audience in general. So PAX was a great sort of opportunity for us to begin reaching out. And so it kind of picked up from there, I think, as far as – and it's and after it got more formalized after PAX is when we kind of started really ratcheting down and making a sort of staff producers and really starting to get real serious about the date and venue and so forth.
Yeah, and PAX East has been phenomenal when it comes to indie releases and indie companies, giving them probably a huge boost on the gaming floor. Like, I recall seeing like all these like indie companies being surrounded by some of the mainstream companies, like seeing something like Deja Bond Games, like right near like Bethesda or EA, yep, for people to just see. Mm-hmm. And it's been phenomenal how the Penny Arcade Expo has been giving these smaller companies a much needed and much deserved boost.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's exactly. Unlike E3 and such, which, you know, would typically not be something that would be indie friendly, PAX really allows that. And having one on the East Coast as opposed to everything being on the West Coast is also really awesome, because it gives a venue for a lot of developers who otherwise would have to fly out and just added expenses and to participate in a West Coast event like PAX Prime or E3.
Right. And you mentioned E3. I was over there this past year, and they had an area for like indie games, but it was called Indiecade. And it was just so small, so tiny, and you would not have been able to find it unless you found it, like, accidentally. And
gotcha.
And honestly, I felt like maybe next year the people at the Electronic Entertainment Expo should expand it more. Mm. Like, give it a much bigger place, give it a much bigger spotlight, because I know that E3 is about showing the big guns, but yeah, a lot of these companies... A lot of these smaller companies need that proper boost that the folks over at Penny Arcade have been giving them. And it was kind of, I'm thinking of the best way for me to say it. It's like...
Well, sort of levels the playing field, I think, on a certain level, because if you really do kind of corner the developers, you know, who are indies in a small section and then kind of put it off to the side, the opportunity for those people to be discovered rather than, you know, it's harder rather than being, say, equally distributed sort of amongst the floor where everyone has a shot of, you know, of being seen.
Absolutely. And I feel like that E3 doesn't really get that job done properly, whereas the folks at like Penny Arcade or some of these other well-known conventions, they have been doing a phenomenal job with showcasing some of these like tinier games that have been made with so much heart and soul. Maybe not with like the proper funding that like a lot of these other big companies have, but made to such a point that they somehow become superior to even a lot of these mainstream games.
Yeah, I know. There's definitely some valid points there, for sure.
For example, look at games like Minecraft, Fez, and recently Dust and Elysian Tail. These are titles that have been made by very small companies, sometimes, in the case of Dust, by one person. Mm. And they've gained a lot of critical fanfare and a lot of acclaim and huge popularity, and it makes you wonder, is there going to be a point where these smaller independent developers are going to start overtaking these companies?
You know, it's a tough question, because it's sort of like, I mean, there's always, you know, you can, I mean, there's obviously a lot of different opinions on that as far as that goes, but I mean, you know, I do think that to some degree that the big budget, high profile, sort of high risk games are harder to compete with, you know, as far as just, well, I guess the point I'm trying to make is because of the high cost, and you know, obviously it increases the risk, which makes, you know, a publisher who's usually going to be involved less willing to take the chances that an indie game can take. And, you know, I was just playing the game Slender, right?
Yes.
Slender Man game. I mean, that's scary as hell. And I mean, the graphics aren't necessarily amazing. The none of it about it is necessarily striking, but the mechanic and the way it works is amazing. And you know, I don't think I've played a scarier game. And yet certainly a lot of these other games had more money, had more resources. So that's not really the key to what made that experience, you know, what it is.
Yeah. And another great example would be like Amnesiac, that series. What a freaky game that was.
And oh, yeah.
It was made on such a small budget, and yet it's been able to compete with the likes of, say, Resident Evil, who have been trying to like veer away from the scare factor and more of the survival horror aspect of it.
Right.
And I've just been blown away by a lot of these smaller companies that have been doing such a great job with bringing gamers a unique experience that a lot of these bigger companies aren't doing.
Yep. Yeah, so and this is definitely, you know, one of the best times ever to be an indie developer to explore those ideas. And I mean, you see a lot of big companies where even the key people from these companies are leaving to start up their own small studios to pursue, you know, their own ideas in a way that they couldn't through a larger company. So you've got everything from, you know, amateurs and hobbyists with ideas, as well as experienced developers who are branching out on their own in this path. So it's and the tools that are available now are unlike anything they were. You know, you go back a decade, and it's just like the tools were so limited. Either they're extremely expensive or non-existent, or you had to do it yourself and make something from scratch. And so these days, there's so many options out there that can allow a person to get right into making a game and spending less time caught up in the technology. So it's really great.
Absolutely, and makes me think of how when Tim Schafer first started with Double Fine after leaving LucasArts, and how big of a company that has become, not to mention how close to the gaming community he's been from doing like these small independent titles to even doing that whole Kickstarter thing, which was a phenomenal thing that just brought everyone together to make this sort of old school adventure game. And I'm very excited to see what he's going to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. It's the Kickstarter platform was certainly was an unexpected sort of success story as far as opportunity that it allows for indie developers, because it's just, you know, it's really very interesting. And I hope that, you know, it can keep up the good sort of the goodwill that's going on these days will continue in the future, because, you know, it'll be interesting to see how many games pan out that turn out to be good and worth having pre-ordered, so to speak. But I think I don't think it's going to cool off anytime soon. I think it's definitely, you know, it's here to stay.
Absolutely. And I think no better of an example than the recent new system, the Ouya, that's coming out.
Right.
And how great that's going to be for independent developers. And not to mention, too, even the folks over at Steam who have been very open to these smaller companies and
bringing them
literally right into the spotlight.
Yep, exactly. They've been really great to the indies. And so, yeah, Valve's a great company. It's really interesting about that news about them potentially being bought by EA and such. That's
not going to happen.
But what?
I don't think that's going to happen. They would never do anything that dumb.
I know. It just seems really crazy. I mean, everyone's got a price, and I'm not holding anyone against them for taking $1 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money. But, yeah, it just is really amazing to think that that could happen, because that's like, I don't know, they've just done such a good job of pioneering this sort of doing things their way, and to be, you know, to be absorbed by another company just seems like it would be really tragic.
So, I agree. And with them doing that whole announcing that they're going into hardware with
that, I know, yeah.
With that whole 3D aspect, which is something that as a child myself I've been wanting to see. And for them to actually say, okay, we're gonna do this, we're gonna go into this hardware business.
Yeah.
And actually get there, it's something that it's almost like a dream come true, honestly.
Yeah, no, Steam is awesome. I love it as a user, you know, as a consumer. It's a great platform, and I guess what's called the big picture is what they're calling it. This new product is, I'm very interested to see how they you know, how they'll achieve that and see how it works.
Yeah, I can't wait either. So going back to the Festival of Indie Games, mm-hmm. how I mentioned Deja Bond Games, who are going to be a part of Boss of Fake, but how did the folks over at Harmonix and, surprisingly, Irrational Games become a part of this whole festival of yours?
Well, I think for the AAA studios in the area that got involved, I think one of the underlying purposes of the festival is ultimately to showcase what is going on in the Boston area. And of course, you know, New England in general, but certainly focus has been the city of Boston and the neighboring developers in this area. And so really, you know, what we're showing is that, look, there's a lot of game stuff going on here. And this, even at the indie stuff that's going on, it shows potential people who might be in the area to say, hey, well, maybe we should really consider looking for work in Boston and in this area rather than, say, having to go to California to find a job in the game industry. So, you know, a lot of the larger studios, they struggle with trying to find talent that they need in this area. So for the larger studios, it's in their best interest to help an event like this, even though they're not indies themselves, but it helps grow the community in general, which helps attract more talent and retain talent to stay in the area, so that when those guys are looking for new help, they don't have to hire somebody from, you know, across the country and move them out here. They can interview locally, and it just becomes an opportunity for them to find, you know, some good people right here in their own city.
It's kind of reminiscent of what Hollywood's been trying to do with Hollywood East, only in this case, there's been a lot more success within the video game industry than the movie one.
Yeah, are you talking about like Pennsylvania?
Well, actually, in Plymouth, there was supposed to be like this huge movie studio that they were going to build, and it just hasn't even begun yet, and they've been talking about it for like 10 years now.
Well, I didn't even realize this. I mean, but it was pretty cool. But, you know, Dark Knight was filmed apparently mostly in Pennsylvania. They've apparently got a really big tax incentive they basically offering studios that film. It's like if you film at least 60%, or like if you spend at least 60% of your budget in the state, they give this really generous like tax incentive to studios. And I think the Dark Knight is among a few. Dark Knight Rises, the most recent film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just done there, and there's several other significant films, and it really surprised me to realize that's where they were actually filming. So, yeah, so it's just a good example. You're right, though. They've got something going on in that area that seems to be working, but you're absolutely right about that. I think that Boston, of all the cities in this on the East Coast, I think has one of the best chances of really, you know, cultivating an even greater community for, you know, game developments. You know, but there's still, of course, other cities. I mean, even Atlanta's got stuff going on, and you know, of course, it's more of the South, but then you've also got, I guess, North Carolina and stuff with going on with Epic. They've certainly helped build some stuff in this sort of North Carolina area.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that's why I think you'll see that those larger studios actually want to be more engaged with what is going on here, because they can help it is in their own interest too to see the community grow as a whole, even if it isn't directly, even if this event isn't really catered to obviously their own products per se.
Yeah, you're right. And it's just seeing all these different companies just coming together to help these people that independently made these games. I wouldn't say that they don't have developers or they're not in a company, but these are just people who have come to this event to showcase what they have and what they could bring to the video game industry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
Yes. Well, you'll be showcasing a lot of these independent titles that were submitted for the event. By its due date, how many submissions did you receive?
I think the total submissions we got were 58. I do actually have the list. I know you and I have been talking about this for a while, about getting you a list, but I have it today. I think the number is around 36 or so, give or take a few.
So you winded it down a little bit between
right.
the 58.
Yeah. Some games were just, had technical problems. Some were just didn't qualify for one reason or another and stuff. But ultimately, we ended up with that many that are left to be showcased. And there's a lot of great stuff. I mean, it's like Field Runners 2, Jack Lumber. Some of these games have already been released. They're not necessarily unreleased. While there's other games that are, like smaller titles that are out there and available now, and other ones are still in the process of maybe coming soon. So it's across the board in terms of the kind of games. I definitely would not say that it's all of the certain genres. I mean, it's a pretty diverse list of games.
Yeah. With all these different games that you've come across for this event, which one of these do you think has stood out for you the most and why?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think of just the ones that I perused and such. I think of certain ones like obviously Field Runners 2 is a pretty big one because they've been working on that one for quite a while. This is not a short term project. It's something that's been in the works for a while even. And so so that's a good one. Subatomic Studios. Again, Jack Lumber, Alchemy Labs. They're the guys that did Smuggle Truck.
Yeah,
and so they just released their game not too long ago as well. So that'll be another one. That'll be a well polished game experience. Another guy. So I don't know if you guys know the guys from the Tap Lab. They're working on a game called Tiny Tycoons is actually the new name. It used to be called Tap City. And so it was a mobile, a sort of location-based game, you travel around and you buy property and kind of do that kind of thing. But you're using, GPS real-world stuff. So
oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool game. I haven't actually played the latest build. They just pushed a new version out that actually announced the new name, which is Tiny Tycoons is the new game. And so I think they're actually working with Will Wright on that as a designer who's helping them. They've basically hired him to help out. So so it's so again, that just shows you how diverse you have everything from shoestring and non-existent budgets. There are student projects there. One that I know about called Nanoswarm, and it was done by some guys over the summer during they're part of the Mass Digi program, and it's a cool game where you play like a swarm of nanobots and you're trying to escape from a laboratory. And so they did that over this course of the summer with Unity 3D, so that's a cool game. And it's out there on the App Store now. They released it not too long ago. So there's a lot of cool games. And, they're all going to be it's great because you have a nice showcase to where people have, it's going to be a 12-hour event from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. So it's going to be a nice long day, plenty of time to scope out everything.
Excellent. So I know you mentioned that there were some games that were cut due to technical difficulties, but out of those that you had to cut, did you see any that had any sort of promise to them?
I wasn't part of the curation process, so I didn't see all of them. I don't really know which games of those were, the details of which projects they were. I know that there was some of them were like Xbox games and multiplayer. And so, you had issues sometimes. Some of it was like that. I think a few of the submissions also were not even necessarily disqualified for whatever, the demo wasn't good enough or whatever, but also just some people didn't follow through with providing what's needed.
Oh, okay.
Like literally flaking out, just like, there was probably six or so of those. And I think there were maybe 10 total that were no's. And so that's
Okay. So, besides your focus on video games, you're also going to have card and board games to show off at this event, correct?
That is absolutely right, yep.
Oh, so what kind of unique takes of these classic styles of gaming can people expect to see at this event?
Well, as far as the board game, I know there's going to be one LARP game, and actually Caroline Murphy is one of the producers on this group with as part of the Boston Fig producer list. She is actually going to be heading up a LARP at this event. I don't know the details of that one at this point. And then there's also going to be some a number of tabletop and sort of, you know, board, paper, pen and paper type games as well that we've shown. I don't necessarily have the list of those games. The main focus at this point has been primarily the digital games because there's been so much, you know, like as far as that's where more of the media folk that we've reached out to and stuff have been more video game industry oriented. So I don't have that list at this point, but what I will try and do is see if I can get that list of people and I can send that information to you so you can maybe perhaps, you know, add it to your website or anything else like that.
Right.
And as far as the other there's a couple other aspects too that of this event, also pretty cool. There's going to be actually three films being shown. I think it's Get Lamp.
Yep.
And then Indie Movie, the Game, or Indie Game, the Movie. And then, and there's another one too, a third one. It's also about, I think it's about interactive fiction. But there's
Darkon.
Also.
Darkon.
What's that?
Darkon, correct?
That's it, yes. I think that was it. And then there's also an interactive fiction space where people who, you know, work with interactive fiction, which would be kind of in the vein of Zork and, you know, text adventure type things where you type in and it's all pure text. Uh-huh. They will be showcasing some of those as well. And there's an art exhibit that'll be focused on – it'll be digital art, I believe. It'll be sort of a gallery of different artists. And I think it's everything from fan art to concept art, to in-game art. It's basically anything that's connected in some form to games. So I think you'll see a lot of also like potential student artists and professionals as well who may be submitting works to that gallery.
Wow, that sounds very impressive. And as you mentioned, these three films, the Indie Game, the Movie, Darkon, and Get Lamp, what do you hope these films are going to be able to bring to both the gamers and developers that are going to be at this event, and what do you hope they take away from the viewing of these films?
Well, I think, I think certainly Indie Game, the Movie, for example, certainly tells a very good story about just sort of some of the struggles of, you know, a few different stories, you know, and so I think it definitely offers a good perspective there. And I think the Get Lamp and other ones, those are, you know, with the interactive fiction perspective, I think also kind of shed light on some of the early days of really what, you know, how video games sort of came about. You know, I think it offers sort of a historic perspective where we look at today and it's all about 3D graphics and, you know, all this other stuff. And, you know, and really, you know, when it came down to it, you know, once upon a time, you know, it's just that stuff, that technology wasn't there. And so it was the way people were able to innovate and design something that could create, you know, an interactive experience, mm-hmm. not necessarily a lot of whistles and bells and all the extra stuff that we've come to expect these days.
Right. Now, one of the other things that you're going to be doing is the Game Jam. And if I'm reading this correctly, it sounds like you're inviting people to bring their own sort of titles that they created for people to actually compete against. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not. I think the general idea with the game jam, of course, and for your audience who might not know what that means, a game jam is basically just simply saying you're going to make a product in a fixed amount of time, and it's typically limited.
Okay.
So a game jam is actually traditionally they are considered they're what they call 48-hour game jams. We have 48 hours to make a game from start to finish. Now, obviously, this event's only 12 hours long, so they're basically creating a 12-hour game jam. And this will be a combination of probably people who may have an idea that they want to make or maybe have no idea at all but just want to work on something. And so it's going to be a very, very, you know, informal event where people who are interested in making a game can participate. And it may very well be that people on the street who are interested in checking out might be able to get involved. So it'd be very interesting to see how it goes and what they can come up with, because some people will just do paper, like what they call paper prototyping.
Mm-hmm.
You work through a game on paper. You don't necessarily make a digital game, or you may find people who are able to construct something literally from start to finish right there. I mean, obviously the games will be fairly basic in nature, but it's still the idea that to be able to experiment and have a working game idea in 12 hours is kind of the name of the game.
Right. You see, when I first read about Game Jam, like when I hear the word Game Jam, I'm usually thinking, okay, it's going to be a bunch of people competing against one another.
Right. Like an Ultimate Champion kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is a different take on it.
Yes. Game Jam is purely as a developer sort of thing, but it is kind of a game in a way. In the fact that, you know, a lot of different places, like I know like MIT's Game Lab would host these sometimes, and I know that there's been some other places where these are held, and And then, of course, there's other similar, these are kind of events that happen annually as well. There's the Global Game Jam, which happens once a year, and that's a pretty awesome event too. So, and Boston has a pretty healthy game jam culture. I mean, I think you'll find that they're usually having some kind of game jam every couple months at least. And so there's a lot of opportunities for developers to get into it. And it's a great experience because it basically gives you limited time. It gives you a chance to work with people in a real situation. So it's a great way to make friends and also just meet other developers that you can click with and not be, it's just a really cool sort of like, it's almost like speed dating for developers.
Ah.
So,
that's a very interesting way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, after a couple of days, either you really like somebody or you can't stand the person. But, most likely you'll have a good time because, again, it's the attitude and the atmosphere of it's really creative and collaborative. So I've never seen, people leave not having a good time. So it's they're very cool.
I think having a bad time is like illegal in these gaming sort of conventions. So, yeah,
it really does. Another thing, too, that I think is also cool is that like we're really excited about having people participate this year because we already have plans for next year and I think a lot of this came together pretty quickly overall. I mean we had a lot of interested sponsors that ultimately couldn't come through just because we really just hadn't given them the adequate time for them to properly budget and stuff. So what's great though is that in this process of knocking on a lot of doors and having had a few rejections here and there, we have made the contacts with these people to talk to them about next year. And we can say, look, I think currently we have over 800 people registered. And so that's awesome. And so we're really looking forward to saying, okay, look, we did this much this year. If if these different sponsors can help us make something even better, we can add things like live music. We can add things like competitive gaming, and create more facets to the event and just simply make it that much better.
One of the other things that you're going to be doing, you've asked both GitLamp director Jason Scott and Kotaku's associate news director Leigh Alexander to speak at Boston Fig.
Yes.
So what was it about these two people that made you want them to be the event's keynote speakers?
Well, I mean, I think that basically they both offer a very good perspective of the indie spirit, and I think that they have a good, finger on the pulse of what is going on in the indie scene. And so having these folks speak for us, and open up for the event and so forth, is really going to be helpful to set the tone for the event. Mm-hmm. And I think, because certainly people will be coming to this event as video game enthusiasts, but I'm not necessarily sure that everybody who shows up will necessarily have a full appreciation of necessarily indie games. They may just think of it as video games in general, and so sometimes you can, how it is. You'll see someone says, "Well, indie games suck or whatever," and it's because they're coming at it from, why isn't this game like Call of Duty 12? Why isn't this got real time shaders and all this other stuff? And they realize it's just the scope of these games are simply smaller, and it's not about the graphics, it's about the experience, it's about the gameplay, and so
it's about the heart, it's about the storytelling.
Absolutely. So these are the things that these games focus on, but again, if a person hasn't been appropriately sort of oriented to that understanding, they may just look at the games and say, well, they're a bunch of cheap games, or something like that, because they're expecting something that's far bigger, it's had 100 people in 2 years to make it or something. So
yeah, but these days now, cheap games don't mean a bad thing. It isn't a bad thing.
That's exactly right. It's not. But and again, I think the speakers will really help. I think set a great sort of tone because one of the big things about this event that really makes it different from others is that the audience is going to be doing the voting on these categories. And the categories and all that stuff are all going to be solidified in the next couple of days, so all this stuff is definitely coming together. But the big thing about it is that they really just they're going to be looking at these games and having to, as an audience, decide what games they want to vote for in the various categories. And so I think it'll be important that a speaker, like, you know, one of these guys as they open, will be able to basically explain how that is and why it matters and just kind of give them some perspective on not being critical on something that they're looking at, because they may not have the full appreciation of how difficult those other things that they expect a game to have, you know, take to have.
Right. So. It gives it a little bit more into the interactive experience of going to a convention, instead of like three dudes behind a curtain who will decide on who wins what. It's everybody who comes in.
Exactly. And that's, we heard, you know, there's been talk. I mean, I don't follow the politics of that kind of stuff, but I know that there's been other events and festivals where there's been grumblings and stuff like that about how objective and how fair is this judging system. And so we felt like, rather than just adopt these existing systems that people have done before, we would want to try and do something that's much more transparent and grassroots. Mm. So what, you know, so that'll be probably a star system. Probably all the visitors will be handed 5 stars of some kind. They can place these stars on different events. It's similar to what we do at a thing called Game Loop, which is a game developer. I don't know if you're familiar with Barcamp, but it's sort of like a Barcamp or an unconference for game developers that we have annually. And we just had ours not too long ago. And the idea is basically a bunch of developers come together, probably anywhere between 100 to 150 people show up, and there is no schedule. There are no speakers. There is simply a bunch of slots. And so people literally call out topics they want to talk about, and then people vote on which of those topics they like.
Oh, okay.
And so we're looking at probably proceeding with the FIG event in the same fashion, that it would be, there will be predetermined categories, but then it'll be ultimately up to the audience to do the voting and placing their stars on whatever games they think are best qualified, you know. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes from this, because we're really empowering the gamer as opposed to just telling the gamer what's good. We're allowing them to decide for themselves.
Mm. And that, again, that brings in a lot more of interactivity between the congoers and even the people who are showcasing the games itself.
Yes, absolutely.
So one of the other things you guys are going to be doing, and I've never heard of this before, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to explain a little bit.
It's sure.
called Pose. So what is that for people like myself that have never heard of it?
It's basically a physical game for 3 or more players. Players play a version of horse, like the basketball game, substituting difficult poses for basketball shots. So that's basically, apparently, so it's sort of a, so it sounds like a game where basically you have a group of people who get together, and then you try to create different poses that everyone else has to maybe try and mimic and hold for so many seconds in order to, and if someone falls, it's kind of like, you know, Twister, you know, you keep going until somebody screws up.
Oh, okay.
So it sounds maybe something like that, and but yeah, it's very cool.
All right, sounds like a little bit more fun right there. I know you mentioned you've already got plans for next year's Festival of Indie Games, but after Boston FIG, after this one, what's next for everybody on the horizon?
Well, I think it's, you know, the big plan is going to be basically, you know, get, obviously, the windfall of exposure, we hope. You know, we've really tried to engage the press and the media, like yourself, to check out the event, of course, to interview with the different developers and to see what they're doing, and to, obviously, share the games you think maybe are very cool. Like, what you like will be this and what some other maybe press guy will think is a different cool game. But ultimately, you know, we want to, it's an opportunity for the media to come check it out and really help get the word out about these, you know, the stories, you know. And I think that's going to be what's important here, is this is a much lower, you know, there's a lower bar of entry for developers who have something going on that can catch the eye of the public and to help get the word out. And ideally, you know, certainly getting the word out about those games to the public and the internet in general will help, as well as recognition. I mean, you can say if a game wins a certain award, they can certainly say, you know, winner of the, you know, Boston FIG, you know, audio achievement, you know, whatever it is, whatever category they could do. So these are all sort of ways of helping to just simply have a game stand out in a, you know, and as you know, is in the, like the mobile and, you know, indie game space, it's difficult to be recognized. And so I think this is a great way for the audience, you know, to engage with the developers. And so what comes up afterwards is really, I would just say that to wish the best of luck to all the games that are out there and to continue their success and to help grow those games, because subsequently the successes that come from this will certainly help spawn further, you know, ventures and, you know, even cooler stuff. So,
right.
And so I think that's really the ultimately what we would like to see come from this is that, the word gets out about these great games.
Yeah. And I hope so too. So one final plug here for Boston Festival of Indie Games. I want you to give our listeners three good reasons why they should check out this event.
Okay. Let's say three best reasons. I would say is one, you get to play a lot of really cool games.
Okay.
Two, I would say is, you know, hey, the event is free. It doesn't cost you much. There will be door prizes. There's going to be some good stuff there. Three is to say, I'd say the, let's see here. A good third one, okay. I mean, to the movies, too. I think definitely check out the movies. If you haven't seen, Indie Game the Movie or Get Lamp, which I haven't seen Get Lamp. I've seen Indie Game the Movie. But, that's another great, I think that's another really cool aspect of the whole process.
Okay. So, again, September 22nd, a Saturday at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's EG&G Education Center from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., the Boston Festival of Indie Games. Come on down. It is free, and it's a guaranteed good time. Caleb, thank you so much for joining us on Boston Bass Brigade, and I know you're really busy as it's coming right down to the wire, and
yep.
We are very stoked to be checking out this event.
And I'm so glad you guys got involved. It was really cool that we got to hook up over at PAX East.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right at the tail of the whole thing, I was still handing out a few business cards, and I was like, and you gave me your little flyer thing, so that was awesome. So yeah, this has been great, and I can't wait to see you guys over there.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to see you over there too.
All right, take care.
You as well.